Okay. Tonight what we'd like to do is, what I'd like to do is have kind of a, you know, church meeting, church decision. I'm going to make a presentation to you. Within this presentation, we'll get into the Word of God also, to look at what the Word of God has to say on the subject of which, and the principle of which I'm going to talk about. And then when I'm done, and any of the men can feel free to contribute, either by question or by comment or suggestion, or what have you. And then if it seems appropriate, we may take a, an informal vote. If we need to look at it more, we could always do that at a later time, and then we have a short time of prayer. So now you have an outline of what we're going to do tonight, and we'll get started. You know, as pastor and leader, I've had to make certain considerations over the course of this ministry, and I think it's true of any pastor, any leader. And the decision is this: faith to go forward in the Lord's work, or is something a foolish decision, and it's not faith; it's more wants than the Lord's work. Now, by faith, we mean proceed with some kind of a program or project when the money isn't there or doesn't seem to be there in a budgetary way. In other words, faith means when you proceed on something and you can't figure out how it's going to get done, and it's up to the Lord. That is real faith. If you can figure out how it's going to be done, that's not necessarily faith. Now, the balance between these two things is not easy, and the decision is actually a spiritual decision. You know, number one, if something should be done, though there is no money, do you step out on faith to do it? Number two, if something is worthy, but not necessary, and not necessary spiritually, you know, how do you proceed on that? Now, to explain that, I'll give you some instances that some of you have heard before. When we had the building in Plymouth being built, you know, I expected as the building was completed that we would have a baptismal tank as part of the building. And I had a conviction that we should not build a building without a baptismal tank. And I was kind of deceived. You know, the men who were the building committee and doing everything, you know, they were kind of letting me know, yeah, that would be part of it. And then they got to a place and said, you know, we just can't do it. Well, you know, what took place was that it ended up people left the church, and we were in absolutely financial straits in the church in Plymouth. But I felt the Lord would have us have a baptismal tank because, you know, we're not just having a church there just for the people who were there. That was not the reason. The reason is you want to see people get saved. You want to see them get baptized. You know, you don't want to see them have to wait till the summer if there's another option. And so, you know, we decided, you know, let's go ahead with this even though we don't have the money, and the Lord blessed. On the other hand, you see, that's one story. On the other hand, borrowing to build and to acquire so that you can have many even worthy things, worthy projects, when it may be greatly risky and it's not necessarily an act of faith to do it, that can be fraught with a lot of danger. And I can give you now a perfect illustration of that. Jerry Falwell borrowed himself into a very impressive, huge ministry. You know, I mean, just absolutely huge. People could have looked at it and erroneously said, you know, look how God is blessing. I mean, look at all the things that this man has. But apparently he has bankrupted the Christian Mutual. And I mean, that's a really big thing, because Christian Mutual, one of the things that Christian Mutual did besides sell insurance was to provide money for churches like this that couldn't get the money from the bank so the churches could build buildings. And now that may be out the window, you know, from the things I read from their material that they sent me. So what we might say there is that a leader, a pastor, with whoever was behind him, took on more things perhaps than they should have, and they are therefore, you know, bankrupted because, you know, maybe they had wants more than it's just a matter of needing something by faith. Now, I wanted to give you that kind of a principle, because that is a lot of times what we are faced with. It's kind of a dilemma. It's a dilemma that I have to think of before I try to lead God's people. I have to think, is this something we really, really, really ought to do for the Lord? And if we do, then even if we don't have the money for it, you know, perhaps we ought to proceed anyway. Or is it something that we really maybe shouldn't do, and so we should be more cautious? That's the dilemma that I have to look at before I bring it to God's people, and decisions made by faith. Now, how does that apply to our school and everything? I set that as a background. One of the things that Bill Joseph, I believe it was Bill, that came up with for our school was having a computer program. And, you know, as best I can tell, that the idea of having a computer program in our school has been met with a great deal of enthusiasm, as well it should be. And Mike Rucker is willing to teach without pay the same basic courses that he already teaches adults. And, you know, this is really great. But, of course, anything like this, you understand, it has, first of all, startup costs to get the program going, and then it has continuing costs, both. Now, how will these things be taken care of? How will they be paid? Now, here's my thinking, and see if you agree. Number one, I think it should be done. Why do I think it should be done? I think it should be done because it is so valuable educationally. To let you know what I mean about that, over the years, you'd be surprised what I consider to be one of the most important courses in our school. You know, I think you'd be surprised. If I asked you to guess, you maybe wouldn't come up with it. I mean, Bible is a given. We start there. The three R's are important. But you know what I think is one of the most absolutely important courses in our school? And I hope that the teachers who don't teach this course don't feel bad about it. And I say it's not their course. But typing. Typing. I think typing is a hugely important course. You know, if you can't type, it always puts you at a disadvantage in a whole batch of jobs that you might have ordinarily been able to get, but you know, when you found out that you couldn't type, you weren't able to get them. And you know, when things are tight and you need jobs, you need to have skills. So typing, I think, is very important. Well, it's just absolutely essential in my mind that you don't go into the workforce without it. Likewise, we've got to the point now where computer skills are in that kind of category. You know, it's practically like the ability to read and write. If you don't have the ability to read and write, you'd be at a disadvantage. I remember a situation like that. I worked for Ford in the summers when I was at college, And, you know, we did a lot of, it was mostly manual labor, but there, you know, I remember in one particular situation, it was a guy couldn't read and write. And I mean, he was always trying to fake it and, you know, fake his way through because, you know, when you're even unpacking boxes, you have to see what the sign says on them, you know, whether it says up or down or something like that, you know. So, I mean, it's a real disadvantage. And, you know, knowledge of computers today, and we can't imagine what it's going to be in 10 or 15 years. So I think that we should go with the course. But number two, I am reticent to borrow much money. Because the reason I am reticent to do this is I am expecting that things could get tighter. And when things get tighter in an economy, the less money that you owe, the better. Remember this. The Lord said this. Remember this. The borrower is servant to the lender. Remember that. The borrower is servant to the lender. The borrower is servant to the lender. Remember that. Things get tight. The less you owe, the better off you are. You know, taxes are going to tighten up things. We haven't seen it yet because none of it has happened. It's only been talk so far, but nothing has happened. What's going to happen? Higher gasoline prices, you know, and what takes place to get higher gasoline taxes? I can tell you what takes place. I remember it as a pastor of a church. Suddenly people who were always faithful to the services, you know, the Sunday evening services, suddenly they're thinking, you know, I don't have the dollars to put the gas in and I can't get to the service. I mean, it just happens when those prices get up, the money gets tight. What else will happen? The bus fee will go up, won't it? It will have to go up. We can't operate with the same amount if it costs more in expenses. And then higher income taxes. What happens when you have higher income taxes and you pay the government more? You have less money to spend out of your pocket and you feel squeezed. And so you become more cautious with your money. And that caution many times happens into the giving of the local church. And then, you know, when you talk about higher fuel costs, that spills over in everybody, doesn't it? You know, the truck that brings the vegetables, you know, he charges more, so the vegetables are more, everything starts to be more, it gets tighter, you don't have the same kind of money to spend. And so when you owe, you have a harder time paying off the debts that you owe. And if interest rates go up, then you're spending more money paying interest. And right now, Plymouth has a loan on that building. It's $70,000. I think it's been up as high as $120,000. And we've paid big chunks on that thing and gotten it down. $70,000. So they pay twice as much a month as they have to. But you know, if inflation comes, interest rates go up, and then you're not paying as much on the balance because you're paying more on interest, and after a while you can be just paying interest. You see, that's economics 101. Okay, that's it. Alright. You know, the more money the government has, the less you have in your pocket. There's something else besides. I think it's very possible that the government will try to squeeze churches like us more in the future. In one way or another. Regulations can cost money. You know, that whole thing with asbestos that we had to go through with our school, what a pain and what an expense that could have been, except a few of our people were able to come through to keep that thing down. You know, they can make regulations about any kind of danger, imagined or otherwise, and you have to conform to those regulations, and it costs you money, you know, and so you might have to lay out money you were not expecting to lay out. Now, for that reason, you know, I'm not too thrilled about borrowing money to do this computer program. Now, the computer project has been estimated to go upward to around $30,000. And, I think in our discussion last night at Plymouth, I think we talked about, you know, that it wouldn't go to $30,000. It would be less than that. Now, the bank will gladly give this money to us and take our interest. They definitely will give us the money. It's not a matter of whether we can get the money. It's a matter of whether we want to borrow and pay interest. Do you know what I always think about when I think about interest? If you are paying $500 a month in interest, that's not what Plymouth is paying on this, but I mean, just think about it in those terms. If you're paying $500 a month in interest, think of what you could buy with that $500. I don't know, that sound great. If you had $500 extra a month to spend, you're putting that out every month. I mean, that's what it's all about. Yeah, think about that when you do your charge card. You know, if your charge card came back and every month you had $60 interest that you were paying on that charge card, think about it. If you were not paying interest, you paid that thing cash 30 days, what would you do? You'd have $60 to do something else with, right? You'd just say, hey, I'll take my family out for McDonald's and spend it on me instead of giving it to MasterCard. You see what I mean? Now, on the other hand, I hope you're listening to everything I say because I'm trying to balance these things out. Without borrowing and paying interest, we couldn't buy our houses to be in, right? We couldn't do it. You know, none of us go out and pay cash for our house. The only thing is, if you bought a house for $50,000 and you mortgaged the thing, you really have to look at your house and say, I'm paying $100,000 for this house, you see. Because by the time you get done paying everything, that's probably what it's going to cost. I got $100,000. I don't have a $50,000 house. I got $100,000 for this because that's what I'm really paying on this thing. But you couldn't have it without. So don't get me wrong, I am not against borrowing, and I'm not making a biblical basis to be against borrowing. But I'm saying that you've got to use a lot of sense and try to do things right. Now, what should we do? Here's my feelings, and see if you agree. My feeling is, let's go for this program, but let's proceed by faith, but with caution. Right? Proceed by faith, but with caution. Now, let's look at some scripture and get some good scriptural grounding principles that we can work on. There's two outstanding portions of scripture when it comes to giving and building. They're not the only ones, but there are two that are absolutely outstanding when it comes to giving and building. And I think that we'd all agree that we can use God's wisdom on these matters so we don't get in trouble, so we do the right thing. So let me give you the principles in order. First, go to Haggai, which we looked at not too long ago, Haggai chapter 1. And then let me put these principles before you, and you see if those principles speak to your heart as we look at them. Haggai chapter 1, verse 2. Thus speaketh the Lord of hosts, saying, this people say the time is not come, the time that the Lord's house should be built. Right, they had an excuse for God's house not to be built. And they said it was not the right time. That was an excuse. It was not the truth. Now, in our case, we are not speaking about the Lord's house. We are speaking about an important aspect of the Lord's work, but we are not speaking about the Lord's house per se. Now, it's not essential. The program that we are talking about, this computer program, is not essential, but worthy, at least in my opinion. Now, go to verse 4. Is it time for you, O ye, to dwell in your sealed houses, and this house lie waste? This is the Lord's answer. They said, you know, it's not the time to build the Lord's house. The Lord's answer was, is it all right for you to have your house nice and paneled, if that's sealed, you know, nice and paneled, looking good, and the Lord's house looks like a dump? That's his answer. Is that right? God says, is that right? That you're making sure that you're doing the best you can to make yourself comfortable, but God's work is a waste. God's work is barren. God's work is not complete. Is that right? You complete your house before you complete God's house. You know what the Lord's giving here? You might call it a first priority for his people, for their efforts and for their money. This is what is known as putting the Lord first in actual practice. Not just, I always put the Lord first in my life. Well, here's the actual practice. Do you do it in practice? All right, let's go to what he says then in verses 5 to 11. Now, therefore, thus saith the Lord of hosts, consider your ways. Ye have sown much and bring in little. Ye eat, but ye have not enough. Ye drink, but ye are not filled with drink. Ye clothe you, but there is none warm, and he that earneth wages to put it into a bag with holes. Thus saith the Lord of hosts, consider your ways. Go up to the mountain and bring wood and build a house, and I will take pleasure in it, and I will be glorified, said the Lord. You looked for much, and lo, it came to little. And when you brought it home, I did blow upon it. Why? Saith the Lord of hosts, because of mine house that is waste, and ye run every man unto his own house. Therefore the heaven over you is stayed from dew, and the earth is stayed from her fruit. And I call for a drought upon the land, and upon the mountains, and upon the corn, and upon the new wine, upon the oil, and upon that which the ground bringeth forth, and upon the men, and upon the cattle, and upon all the labor of the hands. Now do you see what the Lord is saying here? The Lord is saying you can work real hard. You can work and you can figure and you can you can get yourself two jobs and you can spin your wheels. You can spin your wheels and get nowhere financially. You can build yourself up financially. Why? Because he says, I blow your money away. So, you know, you come home, you put the money on the table, you know, you've been working hard for it, you put the money on the table, he says, I just blow that away. It's gone. You've worked hard for it, you put in all your effort, you forgot about me, and you put in all your effort for yourself, and I just blew it away. Now, do you know what that tells me? That tells me that the Lord controls our prosperity, doesn't it? The Lord controls our prosperity. Now, I believe that the Lord could prosper us in spite of a bad economy. If my predictions of things tightening up were to come to fruition, I mean, I would be glad to be wrong on that, you know? I'd be glad to be wrong on that. I'd be glad to have people see me 3 years later and say, you know, Pastor, I remember when you said it was going to get tight, you know, and we're all doing great, you know, and you were wrong on that. I said, boy, I'm so glad I'm wrong on that one, you know. I'm really glad I'm wrong on that one. Anyway, unfortunately, I might not be. So, you know, but even if it was a bad economy, I believe the Lord could still prosper us, not necessarily enrich us. We don't promise that the Lord is going to make us rich people. You know, today's economy actually is not really horrible. It's not. The stock market's higher right now than it's ever been in the history of our country. Now, that doesn't mean that everything is well. That's, things have happened like that before. Our economy is not really horrible, but it is bad for some people. If you can't find work, it's very bad for you. And there's a lot of folks like that. There are, especially in New Hampshire, but overall, over the whole over country, it's not bad right now. It could get a lot worse. It's just we've set a standard that we want to be always swimming in luxury, going easy, and if we don't have that, we say we've got a bad economy. Verse 5 says, and now therefore, thus saith the Lord of hosts, consider your ways. He says, you better think on this. And then he says this thing. He says, you better think on this. Consider your ways. What are your ways? What are your ways when it comes to your wages and the work of God? What is your ways? And those people, they were letting God's work lie waste, and they were giving to themselves, and God says, I'm just blowing your stuff away. He says, I'm the one that calls for the drought here. You know, I call for all of these things so that you're not getting the rain you need, you're not getting what you need. God is controlling it, and God will control. God controls what you have right now, and controls what you will have in the future. And if he wants to blow your wages away, he can. Medically, who knows, maybe many other ways too. Now, sometimes he may blow away your money even though you are giving generously. You say, how can that work? easy. Sometimes the Lord tests us. You know, sometimes we say, "Boy, I'm convinced I ought to give so much to the Lord. I'm going to give it to the Lord, and I'm just happy I'm going to give it to the Lord. I know the Lord's going to take care of me," you know. And we make that decision, and the next thing you know, a whole batch of stuff goes wrong, and we start to lose out, and things happen, and we start to lose our money. What is that? That's a test. That's a test for God's people, whether they'll still go on and still continue to give that way and believing that the Lord's going to take care of it. Sometimes that's exactly what happens as a test to God's people, see if they're going to follow through when the going gets tough. It's easy to follow through if the going's good, isn't it? Well, the metal of a man is when he can follow through when the going is tough. All right, now the principle so far that we've looked at here is the Lord's house first. And then when these people work for themselves, he blew away their wages. And then he says, consider this, consider your ways. And then the fourth thing I look at here from this passage is that they did. They did consider their ways. See what they did here in verse 12. Then Zerubbabel, the son of Shealtiel, and Joshua, the son of Josedech, the high priest, with all the remnant of the people, obeyed the voice of the Lord their God and the words of Haggai the prophet, as the Lord their God had sent him, and the people did fear before the Lord. So the preaching that they heard, which came originally from God by Haggai, it says they obeyed the voice of the Lord. What's that mean? That they started to work on the Lord's house first. All right? Then what happened? The Lord's promises in verse 13. Notice this. Then spake Haggai, the Lord's messenger, in the Lord's message unto the people, saying, I am with you, saith the Lord. So the Lord promises, I'm with you. I'm with you. Now that you've put me first, I am with you. All right, there's a number of principles. We need to fasten those in our mind and in our heart and in our soul, because they're going to control our behavior. They're going to control our behavior, our giving behavior, and our sacrificial behavior, and our work behavior for the Lord, and so forth. Those principles will. You need those in your soul. Turn to Malachi chapter 1, another passage of Scripture that is on giving. Malachi chapter 1, it's only two books away, all right? Haggai, Zechariah, Malachi. 14 chapters, Zechariah, and then you get to Malachi, and there you are. Malachi chapter 1, verse 8. Look at this. And if you offer the blind for sacrifice, is it not evil? And if you offer the lame and sick, is it not evil? Offer now unto thy governor. Will he be pleased with thee, or accept thy person, saith the Lord of hosts? Now look at this principle. It's an extremely important principle. The offering of a sacrifice. Picture for a moment, a man has a flock of sheep, right? That's part of his livelihood. Out of that sheep, he gets wool. And out of the sheep, he not only gets wool, which is an important part, but he breeds lambs that can be used, that can be sold for meat, and that can also be offered as a sacrifice. It's offered as a sacrifice because when you are breeding all of these lambs, every one of those lambs can either produce money to you as you sold it for meat, it can produce food on your table for meat, or it can grow up to be a sheep and produce wool for you that you can use for clothing or for sale. You see, now when you give one of those lambs away, that's a sacrifice in the fact that you don't have it for any of those three things that I just named. And so people were giving sacrifices. Now, you might also decide that one of those lambs you could bargain with somebody, and you could maybe get baby ox or something like that in a trade for your lamb or two lambs. Now the thing of it is, if you're going to make a trade to upgrade yourself, the guy you're trading with is not going to take. He's not going to take one with broken legs and can't see and was gored, a month before by somebody else, and it's now blind. So you say, I can't trade that one anyway. It's just no good. I'll give it to the Lord. I'll offer this as a sacrifice to the Lord. The God says, is it not evil? Is it not evil to do that? Offer something like that to me? Is it not evil? He says, why don't you take that to one of the dignitaries? Why don't you offer, give that to one of the dignitaries and see if the, one of the dignitaries, if your governor would be pleased with you giving him that for a gift. You think he would be pleased? You wouldn't dare give it to your governor, but you'd give it to me? Is that not evil? You know, think about that. Do we give what's left over to the Lord, or do we give the best to the Lord? If we give what's left over, he says, it is evil. All right, now go to chapter 3, verses 8 to 11. Will a man rob God? Yet have you robbed me. But you say, wherein have we robbed thee? In tithes and offerings. You're cursed with a curse, for you've robbed me, even this whole nation. Bring ye all the tithes into the storehouse, and that there may be meat in mine house, and prove me now herewith, saith the Lord. If I will not open the windows of heaven and pour out a blessing on you, that there shall not be room enough to receive it. And I will rebuke the devourer for your sakes, and he shall not destroy the fruits of your ground, neither shall your vine cast her fruit before the time in the field, saith the Lord of hosts. Now, notice here, it says, how do you, if you're God's people, how do you rob God? In tithes and offerings. You're not giving the tithes and offerings you ought to. And he says, because that you're cursed with a curse. He says, bring them into the storehouse. In other words, there's a central place in the New Testament. It's the local church. And he says, do that and prove me. What does prove me mean? Prove me simply means this, that if you're giving to the Lord as you ought to give, he's saying, if you do that, I'll take care of you. He says, I'll rebuke the devourer. What's a devourer? Something devours people's money. There's a lot of things that devour our money. Medical bills can devour our money. Taxes can devour our money. All kinds of things can devour our money. You see, he says, I will rebuke the devourer. God is in charge. If you believe it, he says, if you prove me, see if I will open up the windows of heaven. So in other words, you start to get generous with Almighty God, and he says, prove me and see if I will not open up the windows of heaven and give you more than you could ever think. Now, if you are, therefore, if you are generous with your money, if you're generous with your skills, with your time, with your materials, you give the best to the Lord, what are you doing? You're doing, prove me. Now, the faith part is, you wait upon the Lord that he might handle the devourer of your money. Now, before I proceed, I ask you, do you have to make any changes and decisions before God based on these scriptures? Has anything about these things, have you noticed any slip in your life or something you have not been doing in your life in these areas of generosity to the Lord and putting the Lord first in your finances and in the things of God in God's house? If there is, I hope you'll make the right conclusions. Let me get back to the conclusions that I have made. I think this computer project should be done. But number two, I'm reticent to borrow more money. And so I say, let's try to do it without borrowing money if we can. Now let me say something right here. I hope that this body of believers in this building tonight will put yourself in the place of the Plymouth folks. Because you could sit there and say, hey, let Plymouth borrow the money. Won't bother me. Let them borrow the money. Won't hurt us down here. We'll just keep doing what we're doing. You see what I mean? You could say that. But you know, We're two peoples working together for the same kind of goals, aren't we? Alright? Now, this of what I speak is for a ministry of this church. This school, that school is a ministry of our church, even though it's not right next to us like it is right there. And therefore, it is in it all about. He says, and I quote, what I intend to start out with is basic training of simple computer skills in word processing, spreadsheets, database, and business systems. All of these skills are necessary in today's work environment. the lower grades will get simplified instruction in these areas, whereas upper grades will get more meat. The lower grades, talking about the lower high school grades, the 7th through 12th, is what this is all about. Now, kids, you're going to like this part. He says, I hope to make it fun for them also. Well, you don't like that. Computers have so many uses, it is incredible. Computer-aided drawing, that's CAD for you computer literates. Right? Desktop publishing and accounting are a few of the areas that some students may get interested in. We will endeavor to find something for each one. I don't believe that all the students will go into the computer field. The goal would be computer awareness. If they get a taste of it, then they can build upon that and they can use the skills we give them in whatever field they choose to go into. Many of my skills are in computer programming. I hope to impart these skills to them also. Typically, the only language that is taught at the junior senior high school level is BASIC. I hope to bring many other languages to them if they want them. Then we will teach them as advanced courses. One thing to keep in mind, I have come across many individuals who are not computer professionals. They are doctors or lawyers or businessmen who have learned computer skills that they never thought they would need. We cannot escape the fact that if we want to succeed in today's business world, you need these skills. So I certainly agree with that, and I think all of you no doubt agree with that. Now, there are some needs for this program. We have startup needs, but we also have needs to continue to finance the program. And I will read to you what they are. The reason I'm going to read to you what they are is so you understand. We determine if we're going to have this program that we are going to charge each family an additional $10 a month to help meet these needs. Whether they'll meet them or not, we don't know, but to help meet these needs. Now, for those people who have a lot of kids in the high school, you're definitely getting a benefit. You see what I mean? You may be getting 3 for $10. Somebody else might only get 1 for $10. You know? So just keep having kids, all right? You youngs, all right? See, it pays to have a lot of children, all right? Doesn't that sound funny from a guy who's never liked the Catholic Church? You know? Anyway, here's the things, you know? You need computer paper, you need blank diskettes, computer software programs, word processing, spreadsheets, database management, accounting business, computer-based training, desktop publishing, you know. Then, of course, it's going to cost more electricity for the school just to run the program, estimated at $20 or $25 a month. Who would have thought that? And then, along the way, hopefully, we could get additional hardware, printer, computer, hard disk, color monitors, additional computer, mouse, CD players, and so forth. Now, the cost on this thing, we consider Mike to be kind of an expert in these areas, and he said, you know, to run this kind of a program, you need a file server, and then you need a couple additional computers, and then if later you can get a few more, so that's, you know, that would be good. And those would cost, to get the basics, to get his basics would cost about $4,000. To get a couple more computers, it would get upward, you know, you'd be getting up towards $7,000. That's for new. So I asked him the question, you know, why can't we go out there and, you know, all these computer places are folding up. Well, you know, why can't we find some used computers and talk the people out of them and use their computers, you know? So he had some good reasons. He had some convincing reasons. And so I thought I would read them to you and we'll see where we go from there. He says, we can, of course, buy used computer equipment, but I don't believe that this is the way to go. My feeling is that most systems that are used would be a similar price as new systems based on two items. Number one, the prices of the new computer systems are dropping every month. Number two, the people selling the used systems will be taking a loss because they typically purchase their systems at much higher prices than even the new systems of today. I don't believe we would get a good deal. No one wants to take a loss, and they will price their used equipment accordingly. Based on these points, I would then further point out that many of the used systems may not be able to run the computer programs that we intend to teach the students. Although we will need to upgrade our system eventually, I would rather do this to new systems rather than the used systems. The other point, even more important, is the warranty. With the new system, we would have the peace of mind about our decisions in spending all of this money. So, those are convincing arguments to me, and I'm going to give you a chance in a moment to say your piece. The rough plans we have now is to take our present library and to convert the library into the computer center, and then to move the library upstairs. In moving the library upstairs, what we have upstairs is a big unfinished room. And so there's a lot of work that would have to go into preparing that and making it ready, so we have to finish that. I thought our immediate needs were to purchase the computers. You know, that's coming up. School isn't that far away, so we need to purchase them. And we need the $4,000, and we also, there's a lot of work to be doing, a lot of materials to be purchased, and so there is some upfront money there to be taken into effect also. I thought, you know, maybe we'll have to, you know, maybe we won't be able to get this finished by September, but I thought maybe we could finish that library, little by little. At any rate, one thing is for sure, we need money soon if we're going to have this thing for September. My recommendation, therefore, is that we have sacrificial Sundays for the next 2 weeks. And included in the sacrificial Sundays would be faith promise notes. I'll explain that in a moment. What I'd like to do is I'd like to ask this church for $3,000 above our regular giving toward the computers. And the way I'd like to see this done is that, you see, when we have had a sacrificial Sunday in the past, I've always taught it simply this way. We usually have, if you're following the Lord, the usual way you give is when you get your check or however you get your money, you always know, I'm going to give such and such a percentage of that, and I know what it's going to be, and you set that aside and you give it to the Lord's work. I mean, that's the way it should be. That's the first fruits of your giving. Sacrificial Sunday means that you're sacrificing some money on top of what you ordinarily give. Because, you know, if you don't do that, the work of the Lord just gets hurt somewhere else. So it's sacrificial in that you say, here is money that I would have spent on this, or I would have used for this, or I would have paid this bill. You know, now I'm giving to the Lord. I don't want to suggest that you shouldn't pay your bills. So I'm asking for Tilton that we might set a goal of $3,000, and the way that we would do it is that our financial experts will take the collections when they come in on Sunday and will say an average Sunday giving would be this amount of money, and everything on top of that is the sacrificial amount that's going to the computers. Okay, I hope that's clear. Now, I'm asking that Plymouth would have two sacrificial Sundays for $3,000 toward the rest of the computer needs and toward the building. And then on top of that, I'm asking for faith promises. Faith promises is a little bit easier than putting money in, except unless you always, if your word is good. You put a note in and say, I'll promise to give an additional $25 a month or $25 a week or $50 a month or so to the continued building to get this project done. And then as you give toward that, it can be put right toward the building program. Now, I'm guessing here, I don't know how many wage earners we have in each church. What I'm asking each person to sacrifice above their usual giving is $100. I figure if there's 30 wage earners in each church, and I don't know whether I'm right on that or not. There may be more, there may be less. That would be $3,000 if each wage earner would sacrifice $100. Now, I never tell you anything about my giving habits because I don't think we should talk about that. But in this, every once in a while I do on a sacrificial Sunday. And the reason I do is because I want you to know that I wouldn't ask you to do something I wouldn't do myself. And I will give $100 to each church sacrificially. That would be $200. See, now we only need 29 more givers to give $100. And, you know, maybe you say, well, you know, it's impossible. I couldn't put food on the table. You know, maybe $50 is something that you could sacrifice. Maybe somebody else, $1,000 sacrifice to them is equivalent to my $100 or $200. I don't know. You know, it's very possible that if everyone were convinced, of God's total faithfulness to them, and when they gave to the Lord, to the Lord's project, that he would take care of them, you know, that we could get a good deal more than the 6,000, because we need more than the 6,000. Who knows? We may need up to $20,000. I'm not sure. Just a few examples, all right, to encourage you. I already referred to this. It was 1977. More than half of the people in the church in Plymouth left. We couldn't have had but 25 people. That's not 25 wage earners, that's 25 people. We had the school. We had to pay the teachers. We had no money. But you know what? We said, we're going to build that baptismal and the nursery under it by faith. And amazingly, the Lord took care of it. The Lord took care of it. And you know, that was 1977. 1978, this one's a little more at home. We no longer could stay in that white chapel down there. We were in Tilton from 1973 till 1978 in that white chapel there on School Street. In 5 years, we were paying $100 a month rent. Our mortgage here is what? $850 plus $50, right? $900. That's just our mortgage. That's not the lights. That's not the heat, you know? And who knows what else, okay? We're paying $100 a month. And in 5 years, we saved $1,000. Figure it out. All right? What is that? $200 a year. All right? Now, we couldn't have that building anymore. We couldn't have that building. You know what we did? You know what we did? Having saved $1,000 in 5 years and only paying $100 a month at the time, we bought this property for $11,000. We put the $1,000 down, right? We bought the property for $11,000. We contracted for this building, which was around $100,000. I don't know who remembers the exact price, but, you know, give or take a few thousand. That sounds incredible, doesn't it? It sounds incredible. But, you know, we believed that the Lord would have us here. So we went ahead and did it, and we've been paying ever since. Now, neither of these decisions, I want to tell you something. Neither of these decisions that I just gave to you were based on our ability to pay. They were not based on figures that said it can be done. And that's the way we like to do it and the way we should do it when we can. But sometimes when we can't, we say, you know what, we think the Lord wants us here. We'll do it and trust the Lord. And the Lord took care of it. That's faith. When you can figure it out and it can be done, it's not faith. That's faith. Now, we don't need this computer program as much, I don't believe, but it is worthy. It is God-honoring that we give. And I believe the Lord will bless us as a church and as individuals when we sacrificially give to His work. Now, if you want this plan, we'll start these sacrificial Sundays and... You know, there are work days going on up there. And maybe some of you, it would be a real sacrifice for you to drive all the way up there and help them. But maybe some of you would put aside some time when you might do this. So, that's the plan. Now, Is there any discussion? Any of the men like to comment on this in any way or ask questions or what have you? Now is your opportunity. Yes. Yeah, I think that we were aware of that, and that has been pursued by some. I don't know who. Do you know, Mike?
Yeah, I
did. You did. Okay. All right. You get the exact details from Mike, but it's a file server and two other computers, and there are some important aspects to this that he should, write down for David, exactly what you think is necessary, and we'll go for that. Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. You took the whole company with you, is that it? Yeah. Well, let me say something, and Mike can add to this if he wants. It's my understanding that there is a lot of computer stuff out there that is becoming obsolete and cannot do the kind of program that he is talking about that will be a benefit to our kids 10 years down the road. That's my understanding. Now, anybody could challenge me with that, and I would not be able to give them any answers. But that is the right principle, right, Mike? Yes. Right. Okay. Yeah. Those are some answers that I've heard before. So, I think it's worth a shot. If anybody, anybody who tries this, just like Dave, if somebody else wants to try this, it's fine. Let's go to Mike first, because he has a plan. He knows the direction he's going. He knows what he wants to do in this and what the benefit of it's going to be to the young people down the line. And so we want him to be satisfied that it would be something of value and not necessarily something that's going to break down in the middle of a course also. That is a certain amount of concern. So as I present this to you tonight, it's just not a new idea. It's something that we have been batting around and working on and trying to come up with a plan of attack. And now we've got a fairly good plan of attack. Not everything about it is pinned down, but we've got a fairly good plan of attack that we can go after. And let's suppose that if McCarthy could come up with exactly what Mike wanted for free, we'd still have to come up with money to do the building. And if we still came up with $6,000, we probably would not have all the money we needed. So I think that whatever would the outcome of that might be, we're still in a position where I believe we should take a sacrificial Sundays coming up. And, you know, what I'd like you to do is, I mean, I'd like to put this before you tonight, if you want to, and vote on it and say, yeah, let's have the sacrificial Sundays, and, you know, let's go for this thing. And you can also say, you know, this is too quick for our mind, and I think I'd like to have a week to think upon it, and then take a vote next week, and that's all right with me too. I don't like to railroad anything through, or make it look like I was railroading something through. I just had the impression, I think, that most people have been for this overall, though not knowing all of the details that I should put before you tonight. So, is there any further discussion on this? Anything else you'd like to know? Yes. No, that's probably a good idea.
My question would be, first of all, have you ever had a faith promise, whatever that is, before?
No.
Then, me personally, faith promise belittles my God. I think if men in the assembly of believers think that the program is worthwhile, then it's not before the fellowship and the church and the pastor and the leadership. It's before a holy God that they say, I'm going to get behind the program. I mean, I don't think that, you know, in any sense of the matter, question, you know, it's not before mine. But what I was thinking about as you were speaking, $30,000, doesn't seem to be a great, great sum of money. In other churches, things that you've been involved in, you've spent $600,000 to $700,000 in meetings, just exactly like this. The number of people was different, and maybe the wage scale might have been different. But the God, it's the same God. And I think if this is a necessary for leadership here, so that the authority here, I think that this is what they should have. I mean, I could find like so many verses, and I just came across one which is, for who am I and what is my people that we should be able to offer so willingly after this tour? That's David with, you know, Second Chronicles and the last part of that verse. For all things come of thee, and thine own hand have given. So whatever I put in the offering, it's only what God has given to me, and I'm only returning a portion into the storehouse. And that's the way I would sense and feel about any kind of a project that was like this. One other thing, I don't fully, Pastor, as I said before, understand, you know, the difference between the two churches. You said two, you know, them and sort of us. And as I have fellowship with those folks or whatever, it just always seems to me it's one body, that we're all the same. And, you know, and I don't know all the ramifications that I said before about, you know, how this difference stood up. But Sunday night doesn't seem to me to be different. someone sits here, and, you know, somebody sits here. And so, I mean, as I see them, whatever happens there, I'm sure we, you know, have a heartfelt feeling and a sense of, well, it's accomplishment, we rejoice. And if it's not accomplishment, then we would grieve with them in that sense. So, I mean,
okay, well, I'll try to address the things that you said. I don't know whether I would get into the matter of the one church and the two churches in too much detail, other than we felt from the beginning that they ought to be autonomous churches, that someday may each have their own pastor. So each has their own set of deacons, each has their own set of deacons, finance committee people, and makes their own decisions in many, many areas about how they can conduct things. And yet, as a body, like on Sunday night, I think that we are one under the same Lord and certainly under the same pastor, and I would always feel very badly if we didn't feel like we were one working toward the same thing together. And the school, of course, is a unifying principle that we have. The matter of faith promise, I don't know what you think a faith promise is, and I'm not even sure I know what a faith promise is, but what I felt was that I was not thinking of a faith promise note instead of the sacrificial giving. What I was thinking of, if people promised so much that they would give so much a month for a specified period of time, that the people who are purchasing materials would say, well, we're expecting this much coming in. These people have promised this much money, you know, coming in August, this much in September, and so forth. And as we buy materials, they might know how much they have to borrow or how much they could expect coming in. That was my idea of that. I don't think that, you know, I don't feel that is limiting the Lord. I just saw it as a way that the people who were, you know, doing the work and doing the purchasing would have an idea how much money was coming along. So, it's not an idea that I have to have. If people thought that it was not a good idea, I don't know if that answers your question or not. Anyone else? Yes. Well, yeah, I think it's a start. You know, Ed Sleeper was asked to make an estimate of what he thought it would cost to do the plans that we were going to do, and he came up with a high figure of $30,000. Our idea will be to cut that thing down as much as possible through volunteer help and so forth. So, you know, we're hoping that will be a good bit lower. I certainly think if we were to be able to get $6,000 in sacrificial giving, I think we would be, well started. And who knows? Maybe more will come in if everyone will get behind it. Anything else? Yes.
Is this program going to serve all kids in those grades?
Yes. Yeah, we think they need to know that like they need to know how to add 2 and 2. Okay. Is there anybody against voting on this tonight? I see no hands. Then I'd ask how many are in favor of having these two sacrificial Sundays with the faith, the promises, and some of us hopefully getting behind it in with physical labor and any other way that we might be able to help get the thing as much done for school as possible. How many are in favor of doing all that? Please raise your hand. Okay, I see a great number of hands. How many are opposed? All right, it was certainly a majority of hands that went up, and it was unanimous, no one opposed. So that's what we will do. We'll start this Sunday. It will be a sacrificial Sunday, and the next Sunday will be a sacrificial Sunday. And I trust that the Lord will bless as we try to do those things. And what I'd like to do now is I'd like to, break up for prayer like we did a month or so ago. Men go to that room on the side and just pray publicly, asking the Lord especially for the funds. We've made a decision now. Let's ask the Lord that the Lord will provide the funds, may provide over and above what we're asking for, and that the Lord would provide the way for this so that we might do it. And it would be wonderful to me. I would just feel great if this thing could be done without it taking any loan money. If a small amount of loan money had to be taken, that certainly wouldn't be bad. But let's ask the Lord for that and do that in our prayer. And if there are any other prayer requests, why don't you just jot it down right now? I'll have him pick it up, and I'll let you know what it is. And I'm going to have to skip out on you. I'm in the midst of something at home with some people that I've been working on. That's church people, by the way, not personal business. And so I'm going to leave immediately and let you folks pray. The men can go back there, and the women can pray here. And